Thank you for listening to the Impact Leaders Podcast, featuring leaders in sustainable and impact investment, sharing their stories, experiences, and advice to increase awareness and highlight best practices in order to help us transition more capital into the industry faster. I am grateful that you're choosing to invest your time to listen to our guests, since I know that you're going to feel encouraged and inspired. I am JP Dalman, founder and CEO of ILM Partners, and we're the proud sponsors of the podcast. ILM Partners is an advisory and soon-to-launch multi-asset management firm targeting to acquire and scale investment funds focused on sustainability and impact, one of the fastest-growing areas of investment management globally, enabling investors to generate returns with confidence whilst having a net positive impact in the world. Our mission is to facilitate and accelerate the transition of $5 billion of capital to sustainable impact investing in the next 5 years. If you would like to explore the opportunity of working together, email contact@ilmpartners.com for an introductory and confidential conversation. Your support means everything to us, since it's what really keeps us going. So make sure you share our work with someone that will benefit from it. Please remember to subscribe to get the notifications and check the notes from each episode. We hope you enjoy today's special conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Impact Leaders. I hope everyone is well and not too cold up here in the North Hemisphere. And again, very excited that on today's episode, we have what I call a double guest session today for you with Safiya Zaitoon and Ramkumar Narayanan with us. Hello and welcome.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Hi, thanks.
Thank you for joining me today. Both of you today in Geneva, right? So we keep having Swiss-based guests on the last three episodes, I think. And it is for a reason, right? We are really focusing on impact. We were just talking with you, Safiya, about building bridges. We just happened last week. You had some great events there. And I had people even from Zurich giving me amazing feedback about how good everything is and how much is happening in Geneva. I don't mean to digress, but that's a good way to start. Good week last week?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was an amazing opportunity to connect with so many people in Geneva and actually coming from a bit all over the place. I mean, mostly from Europe, but we even had a lot of social entrepreneurs flying in from several places around the world. So it was really a fantastic opportunity for everyone to come together and talk about where are really the gaps in financing to really reach those sustainable development goals, and how the private sector and public sector and international development organizations and social entrepreneurs can all come together to try to bridge that gap.
Yeah. And I love the name of the event as well, Building Bridges. It's actually what a lot of people say that we do at ILM Partners and myself personally. So on today's episode, we'll be focusing on impact investing, of course, but also a little bit on the underlying information, right? And people, as you listen, you realize, which is very much required to help with the transition of capital into sustainable impact investing. So today we have, for that reason, Safiya and Ram. So let me just do a quick introduction to both of you. Let me read the bios from your website, which I'll tell people about in a second. But Safiya is the head of impact, right, at Amil. Her 5 years at Symbiotics. Safiya has focused on assessing the social and environmental impact achieved by Symbiotics investments. She has also contributed to industry initiatives on social performance management. And before that, she was a researcher at the Access to Knowledge for Development Center at the American University in Cairo. And she holds a master's degree in international economics from the Graduate Institute of International and Development Studies in Geneva, and a bachelor's degree in economics from the American University in Cairo. And Ramkumar Narayanan is head of research and investment at Tamil. With over 8 years, Ram contributed Symbiotics research work in the areas of microfinance funds, markets, and social performance by developing reporting tools and co-authoring white papers and industry reports on these topics. And prior to his time at Symbiotics, he worked for over 3 years at the World Microfinance Forum Geneva, leading a working group aimed to raising awareness of the opportunities and challenges of private sector investments in China. And he holds a master's degree in public management and bachelor's degrees in business administration from the University of Geneva. Anything else I should add? No?
Perfect, thank you.
Perfect, that's great. And I love it. They're very much to the point, those buyers. So let me quick start with, you know, both of you. What is to you sustainable and impact investing?
Maybe I can start. So we always like to think about impact investing as sitting somewhere in the middle of the spectrum between philanthropy and traditional finance. So in the space of philanthropy and kind of donor money, you always definitely have a mandate to achieve some kind of a social or environmental developmental impact. And on the financial side, like if we go to the entire end of the spectrum to kind of basic traditional finance, the key objective always is to maximize profit. So really maximize the bottom line. And impact investing for us sits somewhere in the middle between those two. So you have investors who are really hoping to achieve a positive social or environmental impact. And at the same time, they still would like to have a financial return on their investments. So that, I think, is a bit where we stand. And that's the space that we try to serve to support those investors that are trying to do both.
Perfect. Ram, anything you'd like to add?
No, just maybe that within the differences between sustainable finance and impact investing, as such, for us, we look at impact as a subset of sustainable investments. Yeah. So sustainable investments do look both at the environmental and social goals when considering an investment. But then impact pushes it a bit further by really looking at that measurement. So that's measuring whether you do achieve a social or environmental goal alongside a financial performance, a positive financial performance. So sustainable investing is broader in the sense, and today it's a huge market. Mm-hmm. Impact investing smaller than that, but fast growing market.
Very much so. And yeah, and just before we started, I think I was just telling you again how I always like kind of stressing off that point about sustainable and impact investing, and also, you know, going beyond ESG, which is where, you know, where I think we really make the difference, rather than somebody was defining the other day, kind of one is more kind of processes slash risk, and the other one is actually more about the beneficiaries, right? That's maybe one way to think about it, to simplify it, but it's not as simple, right?
It is, yeah. It's the case. It's a good contrast.
Okay. Yes. And when we talk about Tammy in a second, and maybe at that point as well, we can talk, I think you have this fun impact labeling, which, you know, I made a note of, you know, that we should definitely talk about, because I think that may help. But let me just briefly tell people about Tamio. Well, actually, Safiya, perhaps, you know, you want to share a little bit, because I think you tell a great story rather than me reading, you know, some of my notes.
Sure, with pleasure. I mean, I'm happy to talk about it a bit. So I can start from the beginning. So Tamio was actually born almost a year ago, actually. So I think we'll celebrate our first anniversary later this month. It was registered in December of 2020. And it was created as a spin-off of Symbiotics. So for listeners who might not know, Symbiotics is a Swiss-based impact investing asset manager, let's say, or fund manager that focuses really on, you know, pushing money to markets where there is limited access to capital. So pushing money to where it normally does not flow. And within those countries, also focusing on MSMEs, so micro, small, and medium enterprises that often have limited access to financing from traditional sources. So they try to really go to as deep as possible into those markets to help people who are excluded from financial markets and provide them with access to that kind of support. So historically, the focus has been on microfinance, and more recently, they expanded their activities into other sectors. So that's a very quick intro on Symbiotics. But actually, in-house, Symbiotics had a lot of services that were serving the impact investing industry more broadly. And market research, which Ram is heading, and I'm sure we'll talk about more in a minute, is one of those things. So we had a lot of data that was being collected from nearly all the actors in the industry about their investments. So the characteristics of their investments, where does the money go, who is it going to, how does it perform financially, what type of risk profile does it have? So doing that kind of benchmarking exercise and providing intelligence to the market. Then on the other hand, we also had a lot of work being done internally on impact measurement and management. So focusing on, again, who is the money going to and how are those people being affected by those investments? And What was kind of realized by the management at Symbiotics is two things, is that this is a service that is useful for everyone in the impact investing industry. And it's also more operationally efficient if it's done externally. And then on the other hand, you also avoid any kind of conflicts of interest of having all of that information being held by one private actor who is, you know, they themselves are doing a lot of fund management. So it's better to have that information coming from an independent party. So nobody feels, you know, not at ease sharing their data or getting an opinion from someone who is not really objective. So that's how Tameo was born, to try to bring to the impact investing market those services that were being done at Symbiotics and bringing more independence to those services. More broadly, I would say we try very hard to support impact investors and impact fund managers to make evidence-based decisions. So to really have data-driven decisions for their investments, and also then, of course, to increase accountability and transparency in the market.
Perfect, perfect. And maybe less, I was going to make people wait a lot until you speak, Ram, so that, you know, we create a lot of interest, but I'm not going to do that because I think I want to jump straight to it. So, and it's fascinating again for people to learn maybe first about, you know, the fact that you were born just almost a year ago, you know, kind of right in the middle of COVID post lockdowns, right? And then also maybe for context so that people understand, so Symbiotics does quite a few services. We're not going to talk at length today about it, but, you know, they do manage, you know, funds for investors. I think that we were talking about last time, it's about 2.8 billion AUM in total. And again, just, you know, for listeners, you know, because we tend to have the investors, but then why it's important to have Tameo and the link, you know, between an investor, a manager and leader in the market, in the industry, and the importance of, you know, research and data and independence. And I think that's kind of what I hear, you know, when you speak, Sophia. So I tell you what, let's jump to the meat of it. So you have, I think, a combination of kind of reports for investors, you have the impact, you have the end client surveys, and you have some research, specific research that you do, right? If I had to summarize the way I understand it. So if we go straight to the research, you recently published a report, right? So I think, is that the Private Asset Impact Fund Report 2021?
Correct.
Perfect. Ram, you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, sure. So basically this report, as Safia mentioned, is a product that we were doing while at Symbiotics. And at that time, we were only looking at the market of microfinance funds. Mm-hmm. So as you know, microfinance funds are historically been available to investors as a gateway to do micro-enterprise financing in emerging markets since more than 20 years now. So today it's the most mature market within impact investing. So again, so we talked about sustainable finance, sustainable investing, impact investing, and then within impact investing, you can do a lot of things. You can do specific sector investments in climate energy, health education, and microfinance is one of those segments. And today it's the most mature one. And so we used to survey the market every year, and we thought it was, with the market fast growing and availability of new impact fund products beyond microfinance, we thought a couple of years ago that it was necessary for the industry to generate more market intelligence, more data, more benchmarking opportunities for fund managers, but also investors looking at this market on the whole spectrum of available products in the private market side. So that's why we decided to expand the analysis from microfinance funds to the whole universe of private asset impact funds, as we call them in the report. Mm-hmm. So we started that. We got a good traction last year in 2020. And then once we did the spin-off for us, it was a message to the industry that, okay, we are serious about this to really provide an industry-wide service and not only with a very independent lens in terms of research. So this year, when we conducted the survey, we got a very good response. So 175 impact funds participated in the study. So the aim, again, is to really aggregate data, to really centralize the information on the financial and impact performance of these funds, to be able to paint a picture of where the industry is at today. Mm-hmm. So understand how many funds are available in the market, who are the fund managers, you know, managing these products, where are they located, what are their growth patterns, where the money is invested, in which regions, which countries, what are the risk profile, and of course, on top of that, everything related to the social and environmental performance of these funds. So this report, I would say the target is two main targets. So you have the fund managers who provide us with the data. So it's a self-reported survey. So the fund managers, they report on the funds that they run, and then they report a number of indicators. In fact, more than 300 data points per fund. And so the report is for them. So one target is them because they use it as a benchmark to position where their activities are against the market. So we can have really an analysis based on, you know, if you do private debt versus private equity, if, you know, you're in which kind of sector you're invested in. So you have this aggregated information on different pools. So that's one target. And then the other main, I would say, is asset owners looking to either understand a bit on impact because it's still a niche investment strategy. People who are looking to put together a new impact fund product for their investors, they might see, okay, what are the current trends in the market? What are the players against? Really to get a centralized, detailed report on this type of industry. So that's why this is a yearly project that we do. The first time under the Tamio banner, I think it got a great traction in the market, and we are looking to build track on that and get this going every year.
Fantastic. And I guess so many questions that come to my mind, but any kind of one top trend that you picked up from the report? And also, let me ask you that first one.
Yes. So the report informs about 2020 activities. So again, it's very much, you know, we want to also assess a bit the impact of the COVID pandemic on the activities of these funds. And what we picked up in the report is that the funds, despite the market having a very flat growth in 2020 in terms of AUM, it's expected to rebound at the end of 2021, double digits, in fact, across the whole industry and across different sectors. And financial performance-wise, if you look at the net returns provided to investors into the funds, it was still, across the board, it was still positive, even though it was very low and lower than the average that this type of strategy brings to the investors. It still shows that in private markets, you tend to be decorrelated against, you know, market movements, and being very much hands-on in your approach of investing, being a lot in dialogue with the investees that of your portfolio with end beneficiaries, you're able to withstand and stabilize the risks that are going into this type of activity. So overall, I would say that these two were the main findings, and the rest is pretty much, you know, fast growing. But again, 2020 was a special year, so we need to pause on that and see where it goes next year.
Yes. Just maybe for context as well. So what is the average size of the funds? I think you mentioned, I had a note here. So you had 89 participants, 175 funds, and obviously your 15 years of track record, right? But or a range, you know, so that I...
No, sure. So the... In terms of total assets of a fund, it's I have the exact number. It's 140 to 150 million US dollars, I think, the average size. And then, so that's for the whole sample. And then you have contrasts. Basically, fixed income funds are much larger in size compared to private equity funds. So just the strategy of doing private equity, you tend to be much more smaller and much more focused on your specific investment strategy. So that's
And then the other one, and you see why as well. So in terms of, you know, you mentioned microfinance before, right, as the kind of well-known, you know, let's call it target area. Is there any other big area where the money is flowing right now, or, you know, slash sector?
Yeah, so microfinance, today it absorbs more than 50% of the portfolio of these funds. Then it's SME finance, the second largest. So that's a natural evolution from, you know, what we observe in the market is that these fund managers that used to be specialized in microfinance, they naturally evolve to look at more the SME market because it's a huge opportunity in terms of missing middle, in terms of impact of creating jobs and things like that. So there were a lot of institutions in domestic markets that were catering to SMEs. So you have these SME banks that need a lot of debt capital to finance their activities. So that was the second sector, and then food and agriculture, but those are less than 10% today. And it will be interesting to see if, you know, we are able to grow those fields as well.
Mm. It's fascinating. And I don't expect either of you to reply to this one, but it was very interesting. Coincidentally, I went for a tour on a school on the weekend, and I went into one of the classes, and it was a geography class, right? But interesting enough, they were looking at microfinance, you know, in geography, which is fascinating sometimes. You know, it's the second time that geography here in the UK surprises me. Last time they were talking about water projects in geography and the impact, you know, locally, and then now microfinance. I'm coming to something with this. And then they were debating if microfinance in the end really benefits the actual, you know, again, beneficiaries or the investors in the end over time, and the contrast between, again, private investment and development finance, right? So I just throw that one in case you happen to have a view on it, you know? And
No, of course. I mean, we spent a lot of time.
And the background on this as well is that we do get challenged, you know, as we do what we do with my company about, it's just private money coming from, you know, developed countries, just again, always benefiting. You know, this is something that I think I haven't thrown it to investors because it's difficult to talk, but with you guys, I can talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely spent a lot of time thinking about this and also a lot of time trying to assess this. So to give you a bit of context, actually, when I first started working in this space, I was working with a professor. And at the time, I was doing a literature review, reading a bunch of maybe somewhere north of 30 academic studies, all these kind of randomized controlled trials, different projects that were being run to assess the effect of microfinance programs, or actually not necessarily just microfinance, like different even grants given to small households, training programs, etc., and trying to see, does this actually work? How does it affect people? And then we extended, of course, that exercise into our own work as, you know, through Symbiotics and now with Tameo, trying to really talk to people, look at the results of what they say, how they've been affected by these micro type of loans. And I think it's important to say what it does and what it doesn't do, okay? Because somewhere, you know, a few, maybe 15, 20 years ago, people were very optimistic about what microfinance could accomplish. So a lot of people were saying at the time that microfinance was a tool to alleviate poverty. So really to make that kind of bridge between you are really living at less than $2 a day. At the time, I think the bar was even at $1 a day. And we want to try to lift you out of that level so that you can have more social security and a better income. And ultimately, if you look at all the academic literature, you find that, you know, without going into all the technical parts, you don't have a very significant impact with, you know, sufficient confidence levels and statistical power to say that microfinance actually lifts people out of poverty. So really taking you from one step to another. However, you do have a lot of very clear positive impacts that show up consistently, not only in academic literature, but in studies that we did with end beneficiaries, that there are very tangible benefits that people see. For example, people who are running micro enterprises often are doing it as a subsistence type of business. So they're doing it not with aims of huge growth, but with aims of providing themselves a stable source of income. And what they're able to do when they have access to microfinance is that they're able to purchase inputs for those businesses, which they otherwise would not be able to do. So what we say is that they're able to capture business opportunities that otherwise would not be possible for them. That's one benefit. Another benefit is that
it increases possibilities. Right?
Exactly.
Possibilities and opportunities.
Definitely. Another thing that it allows people to do is that it allows them to have a more kind of consistent and reliable source of income. So they're not really very strongly affected by shocks. So if, for example, someone, all of a sudden, a member of their family dies, or there's a storm that destroys, you know, a part of their house, or whatever it is, when you have access to financial services, you're able to A, have a good source of savings, and also to kind of stabilize your cash flows. So you know that at a given moment, you can take a loan. This loan will support you at a given moment so that you have cash today, and then you can smooth out your consumption later on. So those are just a few of the ways that microfinance helps people. Of course, there's a lot of heterogeneity. So you see that some people benefit more than others, depending on their own kind of inherent traits, depending on whether they're more entrepreneurial or not, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not across the board fantastic, but it is on average quite beneficial. And even based on people's own subjective views, without looking at numbers, when we've asked, you know, literally thousands of end borrowers, do you believe that your quality of life has improved or has changed since you've had access to these type of services? And like over 90% of people say yes, just their own opinion. And then we had one very interesting study, without going again into too much detail, that was looking at what happens when you stop microfinance. So I believe this was in India, and there was a regulation in one region where they withdrew all microfinance projects at a given moment. And it was kind of like a natural experiment in a way to look at the before and after. And you could see very clearly negative effects of people having no longer access to those types of financial products. So again, I'm kind of taking a tangent a bit with this, but at the end of the day, all that to say is that people do have access to opportunities. It's not the be-all, end-all of saving people or lifting them out of poverty. You definitely need more structural change from governments, other types of support, but it is certainly a useful tool that hundreds of thousands of people have benefited from.
Mm. I'm so glad I asked, Safiya, because I didn't expect such a great answer, you know, but it goes, I think what I pick up is, you know, the increase of opportunities. Maybe I wrote it here as maybe the title for the episode, the economic resilience of impact, right? Let's put impact, given that it's 50% or so of impact investing. And on that point is something that I always try to even tell people in developed countries, that all of the things that we take for granted, right? So in this case, I don't know, in the UK, we had furlough, you know, paid by the government when COVID hit. You had the loans to the SMEs, you know, guaranteed by the government. It's not microfinance, but it's that having that support that helps you maintain, you know, your cash flow, right? I think that's the word that you use as well, which again, people don't realize that if you don't have that, takes you to the third point, which is obviously you are feeling a lot better off. I think you mentioned 90% if you have that support, and you didn't mention it, but the effect of just mental health of people, right? When you have nothing and no money and no support, is a pure desperation, right? And other things that happen. So very interesting. Thank you so much for that. So if we think about, I have a couple of points I wanted to touch on. So by the way, on the report, Ram, so if people want to access it, this one is a report that people can buy, or is available on your website? Or
it's available on our website. It's free of charge.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. So yeah, there you go. We don't have to wait to the end of the episode to give you like all the value you can ask for, you know, with just this. And we will put the link as well there. And I didn't mention it before, but let me just double check quickly for the website. I do have tamio.solutions, right?
Correct. Yes,
that's correct.
And then by all means, if people want to check out symbioticsgroup.com as well. I tend to mention it earlier, but we just went straight to the main dish. And so two things I want to talk about. Maybe I think when you have kind of the reports for investors, in a way, this one, you know, that we're talking about specifically is one of them. Then you have the kind of the end client surveys as well that you do. So let's come back to that in a second, because I think it's very interesting. And again, how you structure and how you do it so that people understand it. But just before we go to that, let's share with people how you guys are supported and structured, you know, because you have different investors, Symbiotic is one of them, and then you are funding yourself in a very interesting enough. I was going to ask you about, and Ram, I was going to ask you about blended finance as well, because you talked about maybe two asset classes or so there with private equity. And sorry, I'm throwing about three, four things which I shouldn't do. So let's go step by step. Let's go, how are you funding yourself, Safiya, perhaps?
Yeah, sure. So as you
rightly... As a startup, right? Basically.
Yes, exactly. Yes, we are a startup. So when the company was first launched, it was actually, the shares were held partly by Symbiotics at the time. It was 25%, and the rest was privately held. partly by the employees as well. So all of the staff of Tameo are also shareholders, which is quite great. And then this year, so over the course of 2021, we've been doing some fundraising. So in July, we did the first close with 800,000 Swiss francs in capital. And this was both private and institutional investors, a lot of them based here in Switzerland and a couple based elsewhere. We have one investor based in Japan, for example. And today we're doing a second round of fundraising for probably we cap it at an equivalent amount of 800,000. We'll see if we do the same or maybe a little bit less, which we're planning to finish like, you know, now or early next year, so quite soon. And again, it will be a mix of private and institutional investors. And on the institutional side, we look at, you know, several actors that kind of are active in the impact investing industry. So could be other asset managers, brokers, investors, things like this. And then on the private side, it also tends to be, other than the employees, of course, other people who are interested or active in impact investing. You have a lot of these kind of characters in Switzerland, people who are historically have been active in impact investing since the industry started to grow. And they really would like to kind of nurture initiatives like this to help us bring our services to market and be successful.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. And I ask you that question really because just to inspire people, right, of what is possible, even in tough times, right? And just a quick disclaimer, this is not an offer to product to invest as we do, you know, but please do get in touch if you have an interest to learn more. So I think before I mention, so Ram, in terms of the different asset classes, you know, anything on the blended finance side that as I see some of the more, I don't know if the word would be innovative, you know, investors and managers, you know, are trying to come up with ways to move more money into sustainable impact investing. Any comments on that?
Yeah, sure. So I think blended finance was one of the main topics as well, indirectly in the building bridges last week, especially for the Swiss market. So that just quickly, so these are strategies to, you know, crowd in private investments, thanks to high support from public investors. So you have different ways to do it in our universe where we look at impact funds. The most classical way is to, you know, provide a first loss pocket by the public investors so that, you know, in terms of risk awareness and risk mitigation for private investors, because basically today the dialogue to crowd in private investors, the challenge is that they find it too risky as a strategy, simply because we are doing, you know, as I said, emerging and frontier markets. Why would they go there if, you know, we need to have a lot of dialogues with them to explain, okay, what are the benefits of doing impact? We look not only at the financial performance, but also the impact and then the decorrelation and things like that. But there are tools to help, you know, and including these types of interventions by the public sector. So there are a lot of vehicles in our space that make use of blended finance successfully. We had several case studies during Building Bridges. And in the report, so we don't focus on blended finance because for us, we look at the asset side. So we look whether the instrument of investment is a private debt, private equity, but then blended finance is more on how you structure your capital. Okay. So how do you pull money from investors? And there you have a lot of examples in the market where seed money from public entities was able to, you know, bring in private capital and huge vehicle sizes, you know, they do impact and they successfully do impact. Mm-hmm. So the main message, it works. There's a lot more going on in the market. People are really interested in that. It's a way for investors to look at our sector, definitely.
Yeah, it's like the what and the how type of thing, yes. Right? The what, yeah, being the asset class, the how you structure it. So yeah, that's great. Any particular case that you want to maybe share with people that they can look at?
I mean, there's several.
I don't know, like, you know, like sometimes one or two, yeah, you know, in case we can add it to the...
We had some really nice presentations during the Building Bridges week of people presenting vehicles that are blended. One of them is one that we've worked with a lot here at Symbiotics called REGNIFA. So this is the regional MSME fund for Sub-Saharan Africa. So this has a lot of capital coming in from public investors. Several governments are involved, you know, including public money from Germany, from Spain, from Austria and others. And basically, their goal is to, you know, bring capital to sub-Saharan Africa, since it's a market that is perceived as extremely risky. And if we look at the report, at our Private Asset Impact Fund report, you'll see that the proportion of investments in sub-Saharan Africa are very, very low compared to other regions, kind of on the global scale, different again across different themes. But the idea of this fund was to have a really large risk cushion from the public sector, so that the note holders and shareholders would then be able to get any benefits that come from the investments, and any risks are borne by this first loss tranche. The same we can see in several other instruments. We worked on another one with Symbiotics called the Loans for Growth Fund, which was with UBS and the Swiss Secretariat for Economic Affairs, again with a first loss cushion, but smaller than the one for Africa since the risk levels were lower. I believe there's another one, the Insure Resilience Fund by Blue Orchard. And yeah, I think those are some of the examples. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. So let me start from the back. So Blue Orchard, people can check. We actually talked to, I spoke with Dr. Patrick Shawley when he used to be the CEO. So in case people want to listen to it, Loans for Growth, by all means, please send me the links. I'll try to find them. So we add them to the notes. And then was it REGMIFA, you said? REGM?
IFA, exactly, yes.
Perfect. Okay, really, really appreciate that. It's always good, you know, to show some examples so in case people can look and learn from it. So in a way, we cover, you know, always talk about, okay, so the future on how we scale, you know, sustainable impact investing. I think in a way we touch through, you know, some of the cases, some of the examples. Any kind of one thing, blocker or unblocker that you thing that you want to highlight people should focus on so that we move more capital into sustainable impact investing? And then perhaps, by the way, perhaps by all means, if you want to mention at that point about some of the service that you do, especially, you know, for those that are trying to learn about the impact that they're having.
Yeah, sure. Maybe one point I think which is important is to raise awareness to investors, to private investors. So I don't know, I can take the example of private banks here in Switzerland where, you know, there was this debate that not enough is going to impact. And why is that? Is that because these investors, is they need more information. They need more exchange with industry experts, practitioners to understand the market and be ready in terms of risk return profile that this asset strategy brings. There's a lot of, you know, education on the side to do. And I think one of those angles that Tameo brings is really the data and the information market intelligence on the market. So we are not, I don't say that this Private Asset Impact Fund report helps fund managers raise tens of millions and billions of money. It's not that. It's just to position a bit our sector, the importance, some concrete tangible examples, and really to showcase how, you know, we are, that the industry is doing, and we need definitely more of that to bring more private capital to the market. I think that's one thing that I wanted to point out.
Thank you. And obviously, like they say, shameless plug, they should listen to the podcast, the Impact Leaders podcast, to start with, as awareness. But a very good point in terms of the different ways that you can create awareness, right, at these different levels. I think that's a very valid point. And by all means, I think the report, it can be used in so many different ways by so many different players, right? So I really appreciate that. Anything from your side, Safiya?
No, I mean, I think it's also that people need to not be so afraid of the idea of investing in things that are different. I think the financial sector is so used to doing things a certain way with all the models that are in place today. And I think when something comes to them that's different, they're only willing to put a very small slice of their assets in it. So today, even with this huge event like Building Bridges, we had participation from an enormous number of banks, you know, global banks and also Swiss banks. Like, you had people like Credit Suisse and BNP Paribas and, you know, Lombard Odier, Pictet, all of these people talking about impact investing, which is fantastic. And then when we look at their actual balance sheets, how much goes into impact, I think it's still relatively small. I think it's a step in the right direction, but people are still kind of reluctant because they're too scared. And I think they just need to get used to the idea that there are investable opportunities that can be done at scale in emerging markets, but not only in emerging markets, in sustainable projects, not necessarily in emerging markets, but also in Europe and in the US. So just to try, again, following the same point of awareness and changing the mindset, what we try to do is bring a bit more transparency so people know what to expect. So they know that if I try to invest in education, this is kind of the ticket size that I can expect to do. This is the kind of return I can expect to do, et cetera. Yeah.
You read my mind on that one. And I do talk about it. You know, I was very blessed to be invited to speak at the Impact Investing World Forum. And when I talked, you know, one of the things I could have talked about data, you know, different type of investments, all sorts of different things that most people, as you go to these events, talk about. But the one thing I talked about, which I do not hear enough people talking about, is the change on the mindset. You know, because we talk to investors, large investors, they really struggle. You know, I talk about integrity and walking the talk, right? But there's something that is above that, which is walking the thought, if you know what I mean. Like people that talking one thing, they're saying, doing a little bit, but actually they're still thinking the old way. So they really struggle to, you know, move the money and allocate the capital. Even last week, you know, I was talking to a new kind of well-established firm. They just launched a private equity fund. But when you look at, you know, what they're investing in, it's still all Europe-based, you know, bigger tickets, kind of growth opportunities, which they have definitely an impact angle in terms of, you know, their thesis. But it just ratifies that, you know, investors still try to stick to the lower risk, developed countries. And, you know, how much, you know, net positive true impact can you have doing that ? Yeah, I hope that makes sense. Yeah,
sure. And I think also we need to incentivize them also a bit, because at the end of the day, they are the first people that, you know, in the value chain that look at impact. So we need also from a dialogue, not only with private actors, but also public entities and try to push this.
Yes. And anyway, I know I'm conscious of time. We only have a couple of minutes left. So I'm going to do the plug there because, you know, people should go and check out what you do also with your end client surveys. Because when, you know, Safiya, you explained it to me on other calls that we have, you know, how you look at the kind of the change of information. I have a couple of notes here, you know, in terms of how to choose the investees, the due diligence, the structuring, the restriction, the indicators, the outcome measurement. So many layers, right, that will help anyone that is already in it or that's looking to get into it. So I think that, you know, I understand it because I can see with our clients, you know, how much they struggle to understand the cycles, right? So definitely for people, that would be one thing that I suggest. And we may do another conversation another time, you know, if it's fascinating to see, you know, when I read your bios, how you ended up doing what you're doing. Sounds, you know, extremely exciting, and I'm very grateful that you are doing this, you know, because it's very, very much needed. Anyone last call to action that you want to ask the listeners?
I would say just, you know, educate yourselves, you know, try to learn more about the space from both sides. I think there are skeptics, both from the development side, who think that this is only for profit, and then skeptics from the finance side, who think that they're not going to make any money doing this. And I think both sides need to try to, you know, be open to new ideas, read a bit more, talk to people like us and people like you, listen to these kind of, you know, informative sessions so that they can all sit at the same table and be able to move forward.
Nice. Ram?
No, I think she was point on that one. Another thing which is important, I think, for the industry to grow is to clarify for investors what they are buying. So there's a lot of confusion today in terms of, it goes back to the first point of the podcast about sustainable investing, ESG, impact, what is it? People don't know, they're confused and they don't want to look at it. So trying for the industry to come together under a common language, that would be the second thing.
Yes. Perfect. And I say, yes, this and people, I say the first problem people have why they don't create the profit and impact is the overwhelm of information, right? And having that clarity. And then another point, I mentioned a few points normally, but it's to just find the right support and the right people to help you. And a skeptic, I use the word cynical sometimes. The cynicist, we need, you know, these skeptics, these cynical people to learn and understand and come, you know, on board the bus, right? So that is it, really. Thank you so much, both Safiya, Ram, a real pleasure to have you with us. And yeah, much appreciated.
Thank you so much for having us.
No, a real pleasure. So before thank you, Ram. Thank you. Before I go, I just take a quick opportunity to invite you all to partner with me, Impact Leaders and Island Partners, to help us raise more awareness and create action, as we just spoke about. The podcast is one of our kind of initiatives to deliver on our mission to raise awareness to help transition capital faster and at scale. But we do other things. So, you know, do check out, reach out to ilandpartners.com if you want more information. We also launched the Impact Leaders Program, where I launched it recently. We're looking for 3 leaders to join in January 2022. So reach out if you are one of those trying to create impact and profit next year. And yes, until the next episode of Impact Leaders, God bless you all. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Impact Leaders. Impact Leaders is brought to you by ILA and Partners. Please connect with us to work together in the transition of capital into sustainable and impact investment.